Hey guys, today we have another awesome episode of The Burr Show. I'm your co-host, Chad Gallagher, joined with Joel Kraut of Burr Loans. Buy, rehab, rent, refi, repeat. Meet the inspiring people using Burr to create wealth and their tactics so you can too. Let's do it. What's up, guys? The Burr Podcast today, we have a guest that I am sure you're going to love. We're going to cover a wide range of topics, everything from very tactical stuff to how he structures deals to how he thinks about his life. Dan Zatofsky, a little tricky to say. Man, he's done a lot, lived a lot, had some ups and downs. You're going to love Dan. He's done Burr deals. He's done wholesale deals, flipping deals. Now he does actually holds a lot of these deals back for seller financing. You're going to learn a lot about the why in terms of why he does seller financing. So I hope you're excited. Dan Zatofsky coming at you.
I put it into the bag.
Yeah. Just done with the gym nice and early. You know, went early today. Make sure I'm here for this. You know, usually I don't do anything till after 10 a.m. So,
but the best papa ever. Nice. How many kids do you have, Dan?
I got three kids, one grandson, and another one on the way this month. So, okay. Yeah, yep, yep. So it's awesome. It's awesome. That's what it's all about. Granted, I know it could.
Yeah, why don't you give us the arc of your story? I don't actually know it personally. Sure. It sounds like there's been some a bit of a roller coaster ride, some ups and some downs.
Oh, sure. I think it's the curse of the entrepreneur, right? We all have those. If you don't, you're not an entrepreneur yet. Absolutely. But yeah, I'll give it to you. And growing up, it was a tough life, right? I didn't have the greatest childhood. I wasn't rags to riches. I'm not going to say that, but had a childhood where my mother took off on us when I was 14 years old. My father wasn't really around. He worked, but wasn't really around for us kids, me and my brother. We didn't have much. Kind of embarrassing, to be honest with you, rather than going deep into that. But just by the time I was 14, 15, I was miserable. I didn't have the childhood everyone else had, the great childhood. My father was working all the time or going out. He was never around, and I was left to fend for myself. And I always, you know, we didn't have money. It was like my friends had money. We didn't have money. We had enough to live, but we didn't have money. And I always thought back as a teenager, I said, one day I'm going to get older. I'm going to be rich and I'm going to be happy. So in my head, rich was happiness. But I always grew up with, like, you know, people with money are miserable. People with money steal, takes money to get money. All the fathoms that you get put in your head growing up, from the poor dad, right? We have the poor dad mentality. All that gets put in your head. So I really didn't have that mentorship other than watching my grandfather, who grinded and did great, and a phenomenal role model my grandfather was. So when I grew up, you know, I kicked out of the house for no reason when I was 18. I wound up going into the Navy, right? After going to college for a year playing football, going to the Navy. And because I had no choice, I had to go into the Navy. And I got my college degree in 2 years, thought to finish. But when I came, I already had my first property. When I came out, I got back into real estate investing because it was money. And I became a police officer as well. After 9/11, I wound up leaving the New York City Police Department because I wanted to go full time into my mortgage business and my real estate investing business. And I did. And I started hitting it like gold, right? I'm one of those all in guys. And that's when I started my flipping business, my fix and flipping, my wholesaling, that kind of business. And I got to the point where I was doing about 30 to 50 deals every month. Like I said, making 50 to 80,000 a deal, sometimes north of 100,000. I was doing tremendous amount of money transactionally. I was buying all the things that I thought would make me happy. I had a car collection that people dream of, boats, watches. I still have them, right? Because I keep them, right? I keep that stuff. But I was working probably 100 plus hours a week, making all this money to keep up with the Joneses. And I couldn't even go out to dinner with my wife and my friends because I was on the phone the whole time. I was outside the phone the whole time. They had to take me on vacation where there was no Wi-Fi service or no cell phone service because I wouldn't get off the phone. I was miserable. I hated being on vacation because I just wanted to work and make money to buy more things, right? To show off, to fill my ego. And I thought being rich was happiness, right? And then I still remember it was back in around 2009, 2010. We were out to dinner. I still remember this day like it was yesterday. And it was four couples out to dinner, and it was 6 o'clock on a Sunday. And I'm on the phone the whole time. At about 8:30, my wife comes out and she throws the dinner at me and she says, "Here's your effing dinner, right? Enjoy it, choke on it." And man, I flipped out. I'm busting my ass working 100 hours a week for kids, for you, to give you cars, to give you jewelry, to give you this life. And she just basically hit me hard. She says, you're just as bad as your family was to you. You're not a good husband. You're not a good father. And I'm like, I flipped out. I'm like, I'm doing all this for you guys. She goes, no, you're not doing it for us. You're doing it for you. All we wanted was you. All we want is you. We don't care about this stuff. And she was right. She doesn't care about it. She's the most non, I gave her credit. She can care less about any expensive pocketbooks, shoes, jewelry, cars. She can care less. It was all me. It was my ego was filling. And at that point, it was like a knife in my back when she said, you were like, because I thought I was doing everything right. You know, now I'm a horrible husband, horrible father. I'm not doing everything. I'm missing stuff because I'm chasing money. And I said, you know what? I got to figure something out because this is not going good. And I didn't know what else to do, right? What else do you do at that point? That's what you know. And you're very good at it. So it's like, I'm looking at, you know, do I do, because I had some rentals. I'm like, do I do more rentals making $400 or $500 a month? Or do I flip properties making $50,000 to $80,000? That's a lot, but there's a lot better to me for $50,000 to $80,000 or $400 a month. But when you start doing rental properties and that $400 adds up, it starts to grow, right? $400 times 10 is 4,000 times 100 is 40,000. It starts to add up, but you're still grinding. You're still working. So then I got into seller finance notes, and I could not, I was doing it for owner occupants when the market shifted back when mortgages stopped for owner occupants, when Dodd-Frank and CFPB came in. Well, that hurt me because I couldn't really deal with owner financing anymore because you had to now underwrite the borrowers. And the reason I was helping borrowers with mortgages out is because they couldn't get mortgages from conventional banks. So I was seller financing houses. So that was another boom, a roadblock that came up. So then I started getting into seller financing properties to investors. So I was getting these properties in emerging markets, class B to C areas, fully rehabbing them like I was flipping them. I'm the crazy guy that over rehabs a rental, but there's a reason why. Then I would sell them to investors and I take 30% down at the time or $20,000, whatever was greater. At the time, sometimes $20,000 were greater because I was selling properties for $50,000, $60,000. Now they're not that cheap anymore, right? So I take 30% down. I put them on a note. And then I created five exit strategies because in the beginning, I needed to recapitalize my money to do it again and again. So I started selling off notes. Then I started splitting first and seconds. Then I started selling partials. Then I started doing hypothecation, which means borrow against my note. Then I have banks coming to me and they want to give me leverage on my notes. So imagine you get leverage on your notes at prime minus a half. Well, prime now is about 8.5. So I'm getting rates at 8. But back in the day, prime was in the 3s. And fours. So I'm getting like lines of credit of millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. So I'm buying big pools of assets from asset managers. So it evolved over time. And I've created, because I didn't stop, I didn't let the government stop me. I didn't let the economy stop me. I didn't let life stop me. I didn't let failure stop me. I created what is now the truly the best business in the world. And I sit here and I almost chuckle at every single person that puts their social media post up, how many doors they own of multifamilies. Because I owned multifamilies. In 2019, I sold 800 doors. It was miserable. So anything I do now cannot be operational, really cannot be operational for me. For me to do anything as an operator, I have to have a partner that's a great operator. And I bet on the jockey, not the horse. For me, everything has to be passive. Because I'm not giving up the lifestyle, right? I want it. So when I teach people, I talk about your vision and your why, right? What is your why and what is your vision? Well, my vision is to do what I want, when I want, with whomever I want. If I'm running a transactional business, I can't do that. I got to be stuck on the phone. Like I can't vacation in the summer. I can't go to the beach whenever I want. The reason why I'm on this call now is because I'm going to the beach at 10:30 and I'm sitting there till about 4. Just listening to music. Maybe I'll make some phone calls to my friends. It's summertime. I live for the summertime here in Delaware. Your weekends, I'll get on the boat. So that's why I set my schedule intentionally. I don't let my business control me. And you can't do that if you're transactional because you can make $200,000 this month and next month you got to do it again and again and again. Now I get paid every single day because currently I own 427 seller finance notes. Every single day, I get a payment coming in, multiple. Okay. So I own over 600 assets, 427 seller finance notes, the rest of single family homes. Okay. And it's
Dan, real quick. So I want to understand. So you started out flipping homes. I get that, super transactional. You then move towards, hey, maybe I could hold some of these properties.
Right.
But then you took the next step of, what if I sell or finance them? Help me understand the advantage of seller financing the asset as opposed to just hold it. Like, what do you like about the seller financing side of it?
That's a great question, Chad. There's a positive and a negative, right? Okay. The negative is when somebody pays you off, you're out. You get nothing, right? You also don't get all the tax breaks. So I want to say that up front. So that's why I do hold 1/3 of my properties. And those are my legacy properties that I will never sell. Those are going to family. We're actually creating a family office over the next 8 years. Those will all be in the trust in the family office, right? I already have properties for my grandson. I have a property for my next grandson. They'll be millionaires before they're 5 years old with equity. They'll be true millionaires by the time they're five. So I want to say there's positives and negatives to everything, right? And you got to decide what works for you. So I won't sell or finance everything because I need some of that wealth, that kind of wealth, because, you know, it's like private money. You pay it off, you're done. Joel knows about that. So the benefit of seller financing for me is I don't have to worry about the tenants, toilets, trash, termites. I don't worry about anything. If you have a mortgage and your toilet bowl breaks, you don't call Wells Fargo or Chase and say, hi, Mr. or Mrs. Banker, my toilet bowl break, come fix it. On a rental property, you need to do that, okay? You have people moving out of your rental properties. You have turnovers. You have people not paying. You have you have to go to court. You have to evict. The benefit of seller financing for me, though, is I don't have to deal with any of that. Plus, I get paid no matter what. And I don't even collect a check. It literally goes to my servicing company. And my servicing company, ACH, is my account. I don't even pay servicing fees because every borrower pays the servicing fees. It's in the promissory note that they're responsible for the servicing fees. So it costs me absolutely nothing to have a licensed third-party servicer that handles all the mortgages, all the escrows, all the mortgage interest statements. I don't do anything. Then my bookkeeper goes in every month and extrapolates all the payments, goes to my servicing account, sees who paid. And if somebody doesn't pay, which does not happen on these loans, why? And I'll tell you why. If somebody doesn't pay, all I do is forward it to my attorney and he sends a demand letter. So it's as much as just forwarding a non-payment, right? So I get notified from the servicing company, yeah, you haven't been paid on somebody, forward it to my attorney, he sends a demand letter. That's $150. Okay, and then that gets added to the mortgage. Now, the reason people always pay on these notes is because I talk about this. These properties are great properties in good emerging markets, which means there's a lot of jobs in those markets. Great rental properties. They're not in Class D neighborhoods. They're not in Class A neighborhoods. They're B to C class areas. And that's your blue to white collar areas, right? Your office workers, not CEOs, to like your landscapers, your contractors, your plumbers, your electricians, right? People at work. I always say, think about a couple that works at Walmart or Amazon. Can they afford to pay your rent? Those are the perfect houses. All of them are single family houses. I actually should say I have two condos. Most are single family houses. Most of them are three bedroom, one and a half or two baths. I do have a couple different ones. I have some four bedrooms in there. Those in those class B to C emerging markets, which is quick to foreclose and quick to evict, right? I call them the red states, quick to foreclose, quick to evict. Now it's staying in my property for years. Okay. So now these properties are fully rehabbed. High-end rehab. So I treat them like a flip. And the reason I call it make the property hard. So my portfolio, when I have rentals, they average, my average tenant stays over 6 years, okay, which beats the industry average. I outrent the neighborhood by $75 to $125 every house, okay? My average turnover cost, and I'm a KPI guy, I know my numbers down to the science. My average turnover costs are right over $1,500 on a tenant. So imagine that my rent, my security deposit covers that. Why? It's because my properties are made hard. And when I say that, LVP flooring or wood floors redone, ceramic tiles in the bathroom, roof 10 years old and older, I change it, whether it's good or not. HVAC 10 years old and older, I change it. Hot water heater 5 years old and older, I change it. Replace all fixtures in the bathroom, sinks, all new 6-panel doors, right? So I do those, granite countertops. If I have to change the countertops, if they're messed up, they go granite, level one granite every single time. Even in my lowest end properties, granite. Why? It's because it'll cost me $250 to $300 for Flamenco. Granite by remnant, $700 to $900, depending on the size of the countertops. Sometimes $1,100. But I outrent an A-Bud by $75 to $125 when I do that. I have a waiting list for tenants to go on a property. And I have no problem, knock on wood, no problem. Now, when I put those tenants in a property or I sell a property vacant, fully rehabbed, an investor is buying that property in great condition. They don't get phone calls that say something's broken next month. They're now putting 30%. Think about this. The property usually has some equity. It's fully rehabbed. They're putting 30% down, right? I'm having them sign my five docs. These are my gold, my docs. My promissory note, my mortgage, confession of judgment, assignment of rent, and personal guarantee. So do you think an investor who bought this property with 30% down could be $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 down? They're not going to pay me because they didn't get paid rent for a couple months. And if they don't pay me, that's fine. I take the property back. In 30 days, I have rent coming to me. And I go and sell to the next person for 30% down.
So how do the, can you maybe give us an example of how the numbers work? Maybe take us through an actual deal. Like
what you'd
aim to buy it for, rehab it for. And then I assume this is all in like a credit line.
Well, no, I raise private capital a lot, right? So one of my expertises is how to raise. In fact, I teach that class, how to raise $1 million or more in 90 days or less. In fact, Joel just commented, if day one is how to raise private money all day one. Day two is seller financing. So deals work. I'm generally like any other investor. I'm all in on a deal around 60 to 70% with the rehab. So let's just say, I mean, I could just take a deal I talked about yesterday. I bought the deal for $55,000 in Ohio. Deal's worth about $150,000. So $55,000 I bought it for. All in was about $17,000. So let's just say $20,000. I'm into a $75,000. I borrowed $80,000 from my private lender. I sold the deal for $135,000. Okay. I took 30% down, I had on 30% down. So I had a $94,500 mortgage. Now, I'm in a position now where I just write one mortgage and I keep it. I write a first position mortgage for 94.5 at 9. My rates are from 8.99 to 10.99% for a 30-year amortization and 10-year balloon, okay, with a 3-year prepay. So $94,500 at 9.99, I think I'm getting like 640 or 650 a month, okay? If I need to pay my private lender back today, I could just split that 94.5 into two loans, right? Like a $30,000 second and a $60,000 first. Sell the $30,000 second off and stay in the second, because the second would be like 10.99%. And I have IRA lenders that get 6, 7, 8% of their money. So I can give them, let's say 7%. I get 10, 11. I can get the 4% spread and pay my private lender back in full. He got all his money back. So now I get 4% spread on the second, and I get the whole first for the next 30 years. So I don't have any money in the deal. My private lender's paid back in full, and I'm now collecting about $700 or $800 a month for the next 30 years. And I do it over and over and over and over and over again. Now, what's so cool about this, real quick, is most of my investors that want to buy turnkey rentals, they have $100,000 to $300,000 ready to go. If I was to sell them that one property for $135,000 and they had $150,000, they could only buy one property. Now with $150,000, they could probably buy three from me. So I helped them create their net worth, right? It's a win for them. And now I just created three seller finance loans for myself. Whereas when I used to do owner-occupant properties, the last year I did that, I had 182 properties. I'm sorry, in 2019, right before COVID, I sold my most turnkey rentals. I had 182 properties, 18 investors. So you're talking about right about 10 per investor. My biggest investor bought 23. My smallest investor bought one. But when you do owner-occupant, you're only selling one property to one owner, right? This one, you don't have to deal with a lot of investors. And in my inner circle group that I run, I could probably sell about 50 to 60 of them in that room of 15 people because they all want them. They all want them. That's the biggest thing. They all want those deals. So I only sell those to my inner, I only put them out to my inner circle group or investors that I work with. So that's why it's so important. That's why I love that inner circle group. So I developed a group where I can help people build their net worth, and it helps them and it helps me.
You know, so many people don't really understand the concept that Dan's going over right now, but the power of working with people who can participate with you and buy 10 or 12 or 20 properties versus one, as Dan's talking about. And then just stepping back for a second, you know, when I started out as a landlord and I thought I was going to get really rich, right? Dan's early part of his story, it just resonates with me so much. But I have the sexy haircut from some of those C minus to F to G, oh my God, kind of neighborhoods, right? I mean, think about people we all know around the space, and they own 100 plus properties in C and less quality neighborhoods. And you think, are any of those guys really happy, men and women, right? They're grinding away, like Dan's talking about, 100 hours a week. The phone is always attached to their ear. And I remember being at dinner one Saturday night, Dan, and my wife didn't throw the food at me, but she told me, if you pick up that phone, don't come in the house tonight when we leave this restaurant. So I remember, you know, my story is just slightly different than yours, but I remember that night too, when everyone just said, we had enough of you.
First, a word about our sponsors.
Hey guys, this is Chad Gallagher, your co-host here. And when you are in market for your next loan, highly recommend Burr Loans. I actually use them on one of my latest loans. It was actually an interest-only product, which I really love, because if interest rates go down in the future, you can refinance the product. This is a great team. Joel and guys really know their stuff. They understand investing and have some awesome products for investors of all types. Check them out, Burr Loans.
Dan, I'm curious. You've obviously like Burr'd and done a bunch of unique transactions. I'm curious if you have like a Burr story that's like especially unique, something that a strange house or a strange situation, some kind of property that, I don't know. I think that like a lot of investors have that property. They're kind of like, oh man, that was a crazy story. Something that was a little unique. Anything come to mind?
I think we've all had nightmare stories with it, right? I've had my home runs, you know. Unfortunately, on social media, everyone puts out, and back to what Joel said with you know, being vulnerable. And social media, you got to be careful because everyone puts out their home runs, right? And I think the thing that's people like Dan, how is your social media so good? Because I do it all myself, right? And I'm going to get back to the Burr story, but Joel mentioned that, and you just mentioned it. People don't care about how good you are, right? They really don't give a crap about you. That's the pure honesty. I'll tell people that. If you put out a post, how I made $1 million, you'll get one or two likes, maybe a comment, great job, maybe a fist emoji, right? You put out a post of how I screwed this deal up or how I screwed up in life, and I'll get hundreds of comments, likes, shares, and it makes people more know, like, and trust you, right? Because they want to feel like you, right? They're hurting behind the screen. You know, what they put out there is totally different, right? So Joel mentioned that, and I appreciate you doing that, Joel, too. And that's why I put out my real story. But yeah, I had a story. In fact, somebody else just wants to interview me about my horror story of rentals, right? And I'm going to tell them this story, too. You know, I got into a Burr product, a Burr deal years ago when I was in New York. And I hope I can even talk about this now. I don't want anyone knocking at my door. But I bought this property from a guy who was going downhill, like really going downhill. Typical, bought it from a seller. I literally bought it for about 20 cents on the dollar, the property. And I allowed him to-
Where's the property? This is in New York City?
This was in New York, right? And okay. In Staten Island, New York. I allowed him to live in the property and pay rent at the time. And so he was paying rent, and the goal was he was going to buy the property back, which probably should not be done. You should not do deals this way, which I learned afterwards. Okay, because if you put somebody in a property and they're supposed to buy it back and they don't buy it back and you have to evict them, did you really underwrite them the right way? Back then, it was before Dodd-Frank and all of this, right? So he was supposed to buy the property back. Well, apparently he was down and out because he was into drugs. Well, he messed with the wrong people and he got himself killed. Enough that it was in the newspapers and on the news that the FBI was involved. So I'm now living in Delaware and I got a knock on my door from the FBI. Whoa. Right. So how does this look? Right. I buy a property. I'm renting it to a guy. If he doesn't close on it, I own the property. Well, he didn't close on it because he died. It took me 9 months to evict a dead man. Right. 9 months because we couldn't find him. I had no idea where he was. He was dead. 2 years later, I got a knock on my door about this. And they're asking me like if I was involved, like basically almost accusing me of being involved in this. I said, do you realize how much money I would make if this person actually bought the property back from me? I lost money on this deal and I had to now get a lawyer. I had to now I didn't go through anything because they had nothing. I had all the paperwork. I showed them everything, but I had to deal with about 4 hours of questioning for a guy who was killed and I'm looking for him to pay my rent and I'm trying to evict a dead guy. So yeah, you go through this, right? So I could put out my stories of how
So the guy dies and you don't even know he's...
I had no idea. He's just not returning anything. Like, and New York was hard to evict. No returns. You know, service, you know, mail sent by an attorney, waiting for a court date, doesn't show up to the first court date. They give us two more court dates. The guy doesn't show up. He's dead. 2 years later, I get a knock on my door from the feds asking me questions. And I pay $5,000 for an attorney to answer these questions. And I'm like, I'm just a real estate investor. That's all I am, is a real estate investor. So if you haven't gone through stuff like this yet, you're not a real estate investor, right? They say, if you're a motorcycle rider, right? I went down in an accident. They said, if you didn't have an accident, you're not a motorcycle rider. So I went through that. Now I could also tell you the great stories when I bought a property for $15,000 in a short sale worth $160,000 and only put $25,000 into it. And I refied out, cashed out on the thing at 75% when the rates were in the fours. I can tell you that story. That was more than a home run. That was like five grand slams at one deal, right? And the rent on that property is almost $2,000 a month. So I can tell you about that story. That's the home run deals. But yeah, we all have those nightmare stories. Believe me, we all have the nightmare stories. I have more nightmares than I care to share. But I tell those nightmare stories because I want to teach other people how to protect themselves. And I'm sure Joel and Chad, I'm sure you guys have a ton of nightmare stories. And I always, when people say, you know, what does it cost to learn from you? And I say, it's going to be a lot cheaper than trying to evict a tenant that's dead for 9 months, right? How do you protect yourself against these things? So there's a lot of stories that if I can go back, and I'm sure you two have the same thing. If you can go back.
So I'm sure that happens a lot, right? You buy a home from someone who's
died. Oh, nobody's died. Nobody else has been killed in my properties. One and done.
I'm sure it happens a lot where you buy that property from someone who's down their luck. They don't want to leave. They want to just rent it back. Do you now kind of say like, no, like mm-hmm. I'm not interested in renting back to that person? Because I mean, the odds must be pretty, they're not great.
Almost becomes a conflict of interest, right? So I just say no. What I would do is I'll give them, because I want to look at, listen. Once again, I'll say I'm blessed in this business. If I could help somebody else out, I would love to. And when I meet with sellers, because I still love to meet with sellers, and I don't meet with a lot of them, but I get referrals and I go, I personally meet with people I get referrals for where I live. And I just had it happen to me. I just had a lady who spoke to me. She was going to foreclosure on a Tuesday. I got a call on a Friday. I'm making her an offer on the phone. And I said, listen, we need to stop this auction. And her husband, they're getting divorced. The husband is not cooperating with her. The house is in both of their names, the mortgage is in his name. He's not cooperating. I give him an offer way more than I should have gave him because I wanted to make sure they had enough rent for the next year, right? And her husband apparently was getting more money. Well, on Monday at about 4 o'clock she calls me and she goes, he can't get the deal done. We're going to lose the house tomorrow. So I'm like, here's my offer. Here's my proof of funds. Send it to the bank. Too late. Bank said it's too late. We're within 24 hours. We're going to auction. She lost her house. So what I was going to do is I was going to give her $20,000 extra. More. First of all, I should have paid. I still remember the number's about 139 max on the house. I offered them once. I was going to pay off all their debt, and I was offering them 179 on it. All right. So they were going to get $20,000 to make sure that they can go pay rent. But yeah, I don't let anyone stay in the house anymore. It's a conflict of interest because if you have to evict them, it could look like you stole the house from them almost. All right, so your best bet is just path of least resistance. But still, if you want to take care of them, take care of them. By all means, if there's enough money in the deal or it's in your heart to do it, give them $10,000 moving costs, give them a couple thousand, whatever it might take to help them. I don't even care if you put them in another house. But it's just really is a conflict. My attorney at the time said it's a conflict of interest because, you know, they could say they didn't understand. And right. It doesn't look good. Even though you're covered legally, it just doesn't look good. And you don't ever want to look that way. So if it's on your heart to help somebody, help them, but just do it the right way.
Two of my worst stories are exactly what you're describing. And my policy now is 100% you cannot stay. I will do what it takes to help you transition. So that, you know, you're stable. It might cost a few extra dollars as you're describing, but this way I don't run into a problem. They're stable and there's no recourse to come back. And I think that's really crucial as you invest and move forward and build your portfolio, not to leave yourself susceptible like that. standing in front of a judge and having somebody claim they didn't understand. My home, Your Honor, that is not a place you want to be.
Especially in the state you're in. And that's why it's so important that we all have like podcasts like you guys are putting on right now, because you're giving this information out. I didn't have that. If I would have heard this back then, I would have never let that deal go on when the guy got killed. I would have said, listen, I'll do the house. You can move. If you ever have the chance to buy it back, come to me. I'm not going to guarantee I'll sell it to you, but listen, I'm willing to sell it. If you can buy it, I'll sell it at that time if you really want the house that bad. But if I would have heard this podcast back 20-something years ago, it would have saved me a lot of nightmare and headache. And that's why mentorship from the right people who are doing exactly what you want to do is so important. And I'm not saying it because I really don't mentor people that much anymore, right? But there are a lot of mentors out there that'll do it. I do one-day mentorships, right? I'll meet with somebody for one day. I'll go through my whole business plan. I'll work their business plan. I'll help them out. I do that twice a month. But long-term mentorships, I don't really do that anymore. But it's so important to learn. There's so much valuable information. And that's why Joel and myself and Chad, if we put this out there vulnerably, how we screwed the deals up, it helps people. Nobody cares that we made $1 million on a deal. They can care less. They care that, oh crap, I'm in that same situation. How can you help me, Joel? How can you help me, Chad? And that's why it's important to be vulnerable out there.
Man, it's awesome. I really like it. I'm curious. I got to ask, when the FBI is knocking on your door, I mean, literally the FBI.
Yes.
What's going through your head? I mean, you've spent a lifetime in real estate. Sure. What?
I had no idea why they were knocking. First of all, they came up. I had no idea why they were knocking. I still remember today. I was like, yesterday, my friend came to visit me. I was in Delaware from New York. He came with his daughter to visit me. I'm literally sitting out in my dining room with them for 4 hours while him and his daughter are there with my daughter. And I'm like, and then they start asking me questions and they act like your friends up front. Nothing's wrong. And then all of a sudden it's 2 minutes later. They're like thinking you did something. I'm like, I don't even have like a park. Like if I got a parking ticket, I'm scared to death. Like, you're talking about an ex-cop and you know, I mean, like they don't get it. Like, it's just to them, it's black and white. It's really like this black and white. They don't get it. Like, if they look at the whole deal, I made so much more money if the guy would have bought the deal from me the way he was supposed to, at the price he was supposed to buy it back from me. I lost so much money by him getting killed. Right.
Right.
So I'm like, why in the world? Like, it doesn't make sense. They don't get it. And I keep trying to explain. And they don't understand even how I get, like, they don't understand the basis. How do you buy a house so cheap? Are you strong arming somebody to get so cheap? They don't get this concept because they're in their singular views of, and that's how the world is, right? We were talking about like a little bit about Robert Kiyosaki before, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. The Poor Dad views are so singular, right? Work, save money, retire, get a pension and die, right? They don't think of anything other than you can't buy a house. How are you buying a house at, you know, $15,000 that's worth way more? Are you stealing from somebody? How do you do that? Even private lenders don't understand that. So you got to kind of teach them how you do that stuff. And once you get out of your own way and you realize that this can be done, there's a process to do it. There are people who know how to do this. They will teach you, but you have to invest in yourself, right? And when somebody has 10, 15, 20, 33 years experience, it's worth the investment in yourself, right? Because I'm going to stop you from hitting those roadblocks that you're going to hit. Because I'm going to show you, hey, these deals, and I meet with a lot of, now I coach a lot of groups, you know, real estate investor groups, that they do a lot of business. And most of them are very transactional. And they don't understand, the biggest thing is they don't understand seller financing. Okay, so they bring me in for that. They don't understand how to do it. They're very transactional. And now they're seeing, especially with Burr, they're seeing the issue now with the interest rates. So like, oh crap, we've been living high on the hog for the last couple of years. Now, what do? We have no passive income really coming in. So you have a lot of the people out there right now that can help you. But yeah, that's not a deal you ever want to do. You don't ever want the feds knocking at your door. Especially, it's like getting in trouble for doing nothing wrong. You know, you ever get in trouble for your wife for doing nothing wrong? It's the worst feeling of all, because it's like, try to defend yourself when you do nothing wrong. And it's like, man, how are you even like, I'm the most squeaky clean. Like, how are you even messing with me? Like, do you get it? So it's, that's just one of many. Man, I paid contractors for work not done. They were taking pictures of other houses. And I mean, I've screwed up so many times, but by screwing up, you don't quit. You just put processes, people, processes, and systems in place to learn from them. But if I had a mentor to show me how to do these back almost 30 years ago, I would have never, ever done that. I would have never done that. Now I have processes, very easy processes to help from screwing that up, right? Third-party processes that nobody could really screw me over. But you don't know that. If you get in this business and you look at what everyone puts on social media, make $1 million, you know, in a month, and you just follow them, buy their course, and you start jumping in and taking these, you know, get rich quick schemes or lose 100-pound quick schemes. And nothing, listen, I heard something very, very, very powerful today from Darren Hardy. He said, nothing great comes from anything without hardship, right? To win, you have to feel what it's like to lose, right? So if everyone won, there would be nothing great about winning. You got to feel what it's like to lose. And man, Joel, probably too, we've lost plenty of times. Yep. And I share those out there because I'm not about building my ego on social media. I'm about teaching you that I'm not perfect. I mean, Drew, I ran my webinar yesterday. Technology was all screwed up because my tech guy couldn't make it. So he had a family issue. So I'm running tech on different machines, on an iPad, trying to do the whiteboard on the iPad. It's not working. My slides aren't working. People were thanking me up and down. They're like, the tech was a problem in the beginning. You went with it. That's why we love you. Because people don't care if you're perfect. Imperfect action is so much better than perfect. Everyone, you guys waited. You just said, how many years to do a podcast? You're probably like, oh, we need a logo. We need a name. We need this. We need that. Just get started. Who cares? Who cares? People like imperfect.
You know, it's funny, Dan. I always tell a story. I say, imagine you're in a restaurant and the food comes out and the food's cold and the server kind of screwed up, right? And imagine two servers. Imagine one of those servers is out, like, they screwed up because they're out smoking a cigarette. And you kind of saw them smoking a cigarette. And then the food comes out. And the other server is just busting their ass. And they're running around like crazy, right? And the food comes out cold and they apologize. You don't get mad. Do you really get mad at the server who was busting their ass? Not really, right? Like, you actually have a lot of compassion. And I've seen a lot of those servers end up getting great tips. Because you feel bad for the person, they feel bad. They're kind of like putting their heart in their sleeve, and I think that's the difference. It's like if your heart's in the right place and you work hard, you're not trying to screw people. You're not just smoking a cigarette, you know, taking a 10-minute break. But you're doing the right thing. You're going to make mistakes. I find that those people end up so much further ahead because the mistakes are, I don't know, people just they're more willing to work through the mistakes with them. And when people are honest and say, look, man, I screwed up here. I was working hard. I, you know, was juggling too much. It seems like people are much more compassionate about those kinds of examples.
They all appreciate people who put in effort and show that consistency and try. And you can see they're pushing themselves to try to help you as well. And I think we appreciate people like that.
Mm-hmm. I always say, like I said, imperfect action is so much better than perfect inaction. And I don't mind putting my screw-ups out there. In fact, it's funny because sometimes I do post and I'll voice text a lot of my, you know, social media posts. And I always get one character out there that's like, you know, he's trying to, you know, fix my grammar.
Right, exactly.
And my answer to them is, while you fix my grammar, I'll change the world. Right. And you watch those people that always fix your stuff, they're doing nothing in this world. Right. They have the disease of the once eyes. Well, I'll start real estate investing once I retire, once I have money, once I have time, once I have a logo, once I have a brand, once I have this. And I just go with it. I don't care. Nothing to me will stop me from my vision. And like, I want to teach people what I'm doing. So I put on that, besides my inner circle, I said, you know what? I'm going to be in Florida. I'm going to do a 2-day event to teach people. Instead of me going to Mississippi and just recording my training there, I now I'm paying for my videographer to fly in. I'm paying for all his equipment. I'm paying for a hotel room. I'm paying for lunch. I'm paying for drinks to teach other people. It's not going to cost me probably 10 grand myself to do this event to help other people, where I could have spent $1,500, went there, nice and easy, been done. So it's just about getting stuff done. And that's, people want to see that because they're in your spot. They're scared. They're not ready, right? They're worried for every little thing. They're worried about how people see them online. Like, nobody cares about you online. They really don't. They don't care what your hair looks like. I mean, these filters that everybody has, everything has to be perfect. Nobody cares.
You look great, buddy.
Oh, thanks, brother.
By the way, we haven't talked about this, but I got a sense from online that you've, like, gotten in, like, a lot much better physical shape recently. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In the last almost 2 years I lost 90 pounds, and I've kept it off. And I've been now – and that was without working out. That was just nutrition. And that was just a coming to Jesus meeting with my doctor. He wanted to put me on medicine at 48 years old, and I wasn't going on medicine. And my real why was, I said, you know, I'm here for my kids and my grandkids. I want to be around forever. So, yeah, cheesesteak is great, and beer and wings are great, but it's a lot more fun being active. And my business has quadrupled since I got healthy, to the number, four times the amount of business I've done. Speaking events, I was starting to feel like a hypocrite not knowing it. I'm on stage talking to people about living your best life, being happy, you know, kicking that fear in the face. You know, I'm using that line from somebody I know, Thea Wood, one of my mentors. But it's true. It's like, whatever you want to do, kick it in the face. And I'm walking off stage, I'm looking at myself, and I'm like, not really. I don't say it. I didn't know I was doing it, but I was truly being a hypocrite. So I got healthy. And by getting healthy, I now, you know, my business went up. I sleep better. My relationship is better with my family, my wife, my friends, my students on stage. My blood work is actually perfect. I don't need any medicine. I go to the gym. I've run a couple 5Ks and 10Ks. I'm training now for a bodybuilding competition spring of 2024. So things that were on my bucket list that I always talked about, I wish I could do one day, now I'm actually getting to do them. And I don't know how I'm going to compete. I don't know how I'm going to turn out at this bodybuilding competition. I don't know where I'm going to place. But everyone tells me, you know, a lot, even my family tells me, Dad, why would you do that? That's so hard. You're going to be miserable. I'm like, that's why I'm doing it.
Dan, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about your events. Yeah. Where are you on social media? How do people get more information?
Biggest thing is, because my personal Facebook is filled with the 5,000 contacts, I can't really accept more. So go to my Facebook group. It's called Become a Real Estate Investor with Dan Zatowski. It's a free group, Become a Real Estate Investor with Dan Zatowski. Or grab my book, Passive to Prosperous. That'll basically give you a rundown of my whole business. And if you have any questions, you know, I just, so you know, every message I get on social media, I answer myself. I don't have a team that answers any of those. I have a team that works with me for marketing, but I will not let anybody answer my message. So you'll get an answer from me. If you have questions, if you want to get to one of my events, let me know. I'll see which one's a fit for you.
Well, we really appreciate you jumping on with us today, Dan.
What's that?
Really appreciate you jumping
on. Oh, my pleasure. It's so great to be on.
Last minute, you did, you know, as every time I've seen you speaking publicly and then having the opportunity to get to know you a little bit personally too, off screens, you know, it's been great. And it's been very beneficial for me personally on a learning journey as well. So I appreciate that. And I'm looking forward to being there in Florida with you.
And we have you.
It's going to be really cool to be in that part of that event. So again, thanks again for jumping on with us.
Yeah, man. Go enjoy the beach, buddy. Come on.
Yes. Hell yeah. Salt life, baby.
All right. Take care, Dan. Thanks for joining us.
Great job. Keep it up.
See you, bud. Take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Real Estate Hackers Show. If you've not yet become a member of Real Estate Hackers, you can do that for free at realestatehackers.com. Get access to all the amazing real estate hacker deals from incredible vendors, a ton of content and materials for you, the investor. You can follow Real Estate Hackers on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. If you can give us a 5-star review for the podcast, I would personally really appreciate it. We read every review, and thank you so much for helping us grow this community for you, the real estate investor.